Welcome, I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Call. In Matthew Desmond's new book, Evicted, Poverty in the American City, we meet eight families living in the poorest neighborhoods in Milwaukee on the edge of eviction. Arlene is a single mom trying to raise two boys on $628 a month. After falling behind on rent, Arlene receives eviction papers and sets off into the coldest Milwaukee winter on record to find her family a new home. 89 calls later, she's still looking. Doreen and her desperately poor but tight-knit family prepare to welcome a new baby into their home. It's so run down and dirty, they refer to it as the rat hole. And then there's Lorraine. She's a grandmother. She fell behind rent after paying her gas bill because she wanted to take a hot shower. Sheriff deputies evict her and movers confiscate her things. Matthew Desmond interviewed and met Arlene, Doreen, Lorraine, and so many others when he embedded himself in Milwaukee for over a year, living with and among his subjects. After years of intense field work and study, Matthew Desmond, who's a sociologist, came to believe that something fundamental was missing from the conversation we have about poverty. We tend to talk about jobs, public assistance, parenting, mass incarceration, but he believed that housing was really missing from that. He wanted to explore how deeply housing is implicated in the creation of poverty. In his new book, Evicted, Poverty and Profit in the American City, Matthew Desmond writes, quote, "Eviction is a cause, not just a condition of poverty. If we want to erase poverty in America, we must do something about the stark lack of affordable housing in our cities, because without stable shelter, everything else falls apart." Matthew Desmond is Associate Professor of the Social Sciences at Harvard University and co-director of the Justice and Poverty Project. In 2015, he was awarded a MacArthur Genius Grant. And Matthew Desmond joins me from Harvard Studios in Cambridge, Massachusetts. Hi, Matthew. Welcome to the show.
Hi. Thanks for having me.
Well, it's great to have you, and congratulations on this pretty intense and very revealing book. Let's first talk about this opinion you have about the conversations we have about poverty. We just had one yesterday about the new working class who can't make ends meet, and you came to this conclusion that we spend so much time on jobs, assistance, parenting, incarceration, but we don't spend enough time on housing. Can you talk
about
that?
All those things are really important. Sure. Yeah. Absolutely. So, you know, when most of us think about what to do about the fact that America is the richest democracy with the worst poverty, we kind of tend to focus on jobs. You know, we focus on raising wages or incentivizing work. But I think jobs are only part of the solution. Housing has to be part of it, too. We've reached a point in America where most poor renting families now are spending at least half of what they have on housing. And one in four are spending over 70% of their income just on rent and utilities. So I think that that is a massive challenge when it comes to addressing inequality. And I think that we can't fix poverty without fixing housing.
Yeah, and as you know, we have a major, major housing crisis here in the Bay Area. And you write that while your book is set in Milwaukee, it really tells an American story.
It does. You know, we've seen housing prices go up all around the country, especially in the last 15 years, between 1995 and today. Median rent in America has increased by over 70%. But during the years where many poor families were watching their housing costs go up and up and up, their incomes weren't going up. You know, they've had stagnant incomes. And the third kind of piece of this puzzle is about housing assistance. And I think that many of us, when we picture the typical low-income family, we think that they live in public housing or get help in some way from the government when it comes to meeting their housing costs. But that's not true. The opposite is true. Only about one in four families in America who qualifies for any kind of housing assistance receives it. And the waiting list for public housing in some of our biggest cities like San Francisco and Washington, D.C., that waiting list is not counted in years. It's counted in decades, which means a young parent that applies for public housing today could be a grandparent by the time her or his application comes out.
It was kind of shocking to read about how much rent has increased. And of course, I know how much it's increased in San Francisco, but it was surprising to read that this is also happening in small towns across the country. What explains this massive increase?
There's a lot of different ideas about what's driving the increase of housing costs. There's an idea that folks more means returning to the city and bidding up the cost. There's an idea that an increase of certain kinds of regulations like zoning laws bid up the cost and prevent us from building smaller housing. I think that the larger picture maybe is that this is something that we've allowed to happen as a country. And it didn't always used to be like this. There used to be a bit more regulation and thought about the degree to which we allow housing prices to go up. But we've seen incredibly historic rises in housing prices in cities like San Francisco and Seattle, and to the point that even families of middle-class means can't afford to live in the city.
You also write about other costs. In Milwaukee and across the nation, most renters were responsible for keeping the lights and the heat on, but that had become increasingly difficult to do so. Since the year 2000, the cost of fuels and utilities had risen by more than 50%, thanks to increasing global demand and the expiration of price caps. In a typical year, almost one in five poor renting families nationwide missed payments and received a disconnection notice from their utility company. I mean, another huge increase. Since 2000, the cost of fuels and utilities had risen by 50%.
It's a big part of the story. And a lot of times when we talk about the story, we do talk about rents. But we do have to pay attention to just what's it cost to put heat in our house or air conditioning in our house as well. You know, one of the folks that you mentioned at the introduction, Arlene, you know, when I met her, she was paying 88% of her income just on rent, you know, and she's living in a very shabby two-bedroom apartment in a very poor neighborhood in Milwaukee, which is the fourth poorest city in the country. And, you know, Arlene couldn't afford to pay rent and utilities at the same time. She just was impossible. So what she did was, you know, pay the landlord during the winter because there's a moratorium on gas shutoffs. But when that moratorium lifts in April, she switched teams, you know, and she started paying the utility company, shorting her landlord, she'd get evicted. And you can see this in the statistical data, too. A lot of families kind of are playing this game because they can't serve both masters. And so every year in Milwaukee and a lot of other cities across the country, evictions spike in the summer and drop in the winter because people are kind of switching teams.
Mm. We'll talk about Arlene and the other people you met. But first off, why did you choose to focus on Milwaukee?
I think a lot of times the story of the American cities told on the margins. You know, we do spend a lot of time talking about New York and San Francisco, and rightfully so, incredibly important cities. And we also spend a lot of time talking about cities like Newark or Detroit, cities that many folks would consider maybe our biggest failures. But if you want to tell a broader American story, setting yourself down in a city like Milwaukee gives you a shot at that. It gives you a shot at representing the experiences of, you know, folks in St. Louis and Cleveland and Houston and Minneapolis. And so I thought that, you know, Milwaukee was a good representative case to tell a national story.
And so how did you find the people that you met? Because you were very intimate with them. I mean, you were able to really ask them very personal questions. You lived among them. How were you able to find them?
So I started by moving into their neighborhood. So I moved into a trailer park on the far south side of Milwaukee, and I lived in a trailer for about 5 months. And then I moved onto the north side of the city, which is the inner city, and I lived there for about 10 months. And from those two neighborhoods, kind of got to know families getting evicted and landlords doing the evicting. So when I write about Lorraine, for example, evicted in the trailer park, she was my neighbor. So I think that being in the neighborhood helped quite a bit, and just kind of spending as much time on the ground as I could opened some doors.
Had any of these people been interviewed before?
I don't think so.
Hmm. So what was their response when you came in and said you wanted to tell their story? I mean, what was the, was there an overall theme? Was there something that they really wanted to get out to let people know about?
Yeah, everyone is a bit different. You know, some people opened up immediately and kind of unfurled right in front of you. And I don't know if we fully understand why folks do that. You know, some people are just thoroughly honest in a way. And then some folks were slower and much more cautious. And people suspected that I was all sorts of other things, you know, undercover cop, undercover social worker, a spy for the city, a drug addict. And I think that I took to carrying around my other published work and showing it to people, saying that I'm a writer here, this is some of what I do, that helped a bit. The landlords wanted their perspective out there too. You know, they were proud of their work. They wanted folks to know what they went through, and they felt that they had built something up from nothing, and wanted to get their perspectives in the book.
You've got some amazing stories about landlords in your book. Today we're speaking with Matthew Desmond, author of the new book. Actually, it's a bestseller now, called Evicted: Poverty and Profit in the American City. And Matthew was thinking about the conversation we tend to have about poverty. We focus on jobs, incarceration, social programs, all very important issues. But he believes that housing is often missing from that picture. And so he embedded himself in Milwaukee for over a year, from 2008 to 2009, which is really interesting timing, since that was the time of the recession. And he lived among his subjects in a white trailer park and a rooming house in the black inner city. And he's talking with us today about his experience. And we'd love to hear from you. We are having a major housing and eviction crisis in the Bay Area. And if you've been affected by these issues, if you have lived in substandard housing, we'd love to hear from you. What has your experience been like? The toll-free number is 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. You can also email feedback@yourcallradio.org. So let's dive in and talk about some of the people you met. We've spoken about them briefly, but tell us a little bit more about Arlene. And I guess what's really shocked me about Arlene is you write that, so she's got two boys, she's living on $628 a month. After she got eviction papers, she had to set off into a very cold winter. Those of us who are from California don't even know this kind of cold. And she had to find a new home. And 89 phone calls later, she was still looking. Has she found housing? Are you still in touch with her?
Yeah. I mean, she's doing a bit better today. Part of what I've done with proceeds from this book is start a foundation called the Evicted Book Foundation, which directly benefits folks in the book. So we're working with Arlene and other folks in the book to help them find decent, affordable housing in safe neighborhoods. You know, when I met Arlene, you know, she's a single mom trying to raise two boys. She's spending almost everything she has just on rent to live at the very bottom of the market. And that's an important point. You know, there are a lot of families out there that are spending 60, 70, 80% of their income on housing costs. And under those conditions, you don't need to make a huge mistake or have a major setback to invite an eviction. Something very small can do it. You know, the book opens up with Arlene's 14-year-old boy hitting a car with a snowball. You know, he's cutting up like a lot of 14-year-olds do. And, you know, the man whose car he hit, you know, ended up chasing him inside and kicking their door in, and the landlord evicted him for damaging property. And so something as innocent as a snowball can lead to an eviction. For people like Arlene, eviction is much more the result of inevitability than personal irresponsibility.
Tell us about what else can lead to an eviction based on the conversations you had.
Well, if you have a situation where most poor renting families are spending most of their income on housing, the big, huge reason is they fall behind in rent. But a lot more people fall behind in rent that are evicted. So landlord discretion comes into play a lot here. Some landlords work with tenants, let tenants slide, give them breaks. Some landlords are quick to evict. And other things that don't have anything to do with, you know, the bottom line come into play too. And one of the things that we found was kids. You know, the face of America's eviction epidemic is moms with kids. Mm-hmm. And anyone that's been in an urban housing court knows this. Until recently, the South Bronx Housing Court in New York City had a daycare inside of it because there were so many kids coming through its doors. And one thing that we did was we interviewed 250 people right after their eviction court. We wanted to understand, why do you get evicted but I don't, even though we owe the landlord the exact same amount? And what we found was that kids is the answer. You know, if you live with kids, it basically triples your odds of getting an eviction. And what you're seeing in that decision is kind of landlords deciding to work with folks that don't have kids or smaller families compared to those who do have kids or have bigger families.
What surprised you the most, or what really hit you the hardest when you were around some of these kids? Because, you know, having to deal with poverty as a child is traumatic, but then having to see your parent or parents be evicted just adds more trauma to that experience.
I remember this one eviction with Arlene where we didn't know the movers were coming, and they kind of popped up all of a sudden and started kind of just packing everything up. And, you know, it's a pretty chaotic scene. You know, imagine that you're just home one day and you get a knock on the door and suddenly you're moving that day right now. And during this kind of very chaotic scene, Jafaris came home. Jafaris is Arlene's six-year-old. And he came upstairs and he took this in, and he didn't cry. He didn't ask a question. He didn't run to get a favorite possession. He just turned around and went outside, because, you know, that wasn't his first eviction. Mm. And, you know, if we've reached a point where kids today are reacting to evictions, reacting to homelessness like that, I think that should trouble you. That moment really stuck with me.
Matthew Desmond is author of the book Evicted: Poverty and Profit in the American City. And for a year, from 2008 to 2009, he lived with people in Milwaukee in a white trailer park and a rooming house in the black inner city. And he interviewed a number of people who are dealing with evictions. What about the industry around this, Matthew? Talk a little bit about that. You write that these days there are sheriff squads whose full-time job is to carry out eviction and foreclosure orders. There are moving companies specializing in evictions. They work all day, every day. Hundreds of data mining companies that sell landlords tenant screening reports, listing past evictions and court filings. How did we get to this point where we've got this growing industry?
The industry comes around the problem to triage the problem. You know, evictions used to be rare in America, and they used to draw crowds. But today, you know, families living in poor neighborhoods have grown really used to the rumble of the truck through their streets and the knocks in the early mornings. In Milwaukee, where the book is set, if you look at every eviction people go through, formal evictions that go through the court, informal evictions that don't, you learn that every 2 years, 1 in 8 renters is evicted. 1 in 8, incredible amount. We know from national data, renters in over 2.8 million homes think they'll be evicted soon. And so, you know, moving companies have come up to address that. You know, landlord screening companies have come up to sell landlords information about eviction records and kind of tenant behavior. There's an industry around it. The industry that's most important here, though, is landlording, and just the industry of offering families housing. The book works really hard at complicating this really fraught and complicated relationship that between landlords and tenants. I do think we let ourselves off the hook a bit if we just say, oh, these tenants are irresponsible, or, oh, these landlords are just greedy. If you look at it from the ground level, it's a lot more messier than that. But one thing I learned is that there is a profit to be made in landlording, even landlording in very poor neighborhoods. So Arlene's landlord, Sharina, took home in an average month more than Arlene took home in an entire year. She owned 36 units. All of them were in the inner city. She rented exclusively to poor people. I think we need to face the fact that poverty is not just the result of low income. It's also the result of extractive markets. Mm. Some people make a pretty penny off poor folks.
Well, tell us about one of the major landlords in your book. Tell us about Sharina Traver. You write that in addition to being a landlord, she also has a credit repair business, an investment business. She purchased 2 15-passenger vans and started Prisoner Connections. For $25 to $50 a seat, she'll transport girlfriends and mothers and children to visit their incarcerated loved ones. Sharina has found her calling, you write, inner-city entrepreneur. And she owns 36 units, all in the inner city.
Yeah, that's right. So when I met Sharina, she had been a landlord for about 4 years. Before that, she was a public school teacher, elementary school teacher. And she managed inner city properties with her husband. And they made a decent living. You know, they made a six-figure income. They lived in a five-bedroom house. They took vacations to the Caribbean every year. Sherina could be very generous and charitable with her tenants. You see her at turns in the book buying tenants groceries, serving as kind of a relationship counselor for tenants, letting, you know, missed payments slide. And then you see her at other turns, you know, evicting a tenant for reporting housing problems or kind of responding out of emotion. And kind of when she felt played or frustrated with the tenant, sometimes she'd grab the pink papers, the eviction summons and complaint. And so I think Sherina's a really complicated and interesting person, and the book really tries to capture her full essence.
Has she read your book?
Yeah, she has.
And what was her reaction?
She comes off in the book as a very honest person, and I think that the book tried to do justice to that fact, you know. And so she, you know, and I was especially clear with her about, you know, are you okay with this part? Does this sound right to you? And kind of fact checked it with her, and she gave it her blessing, signed off on it. You know, Sherina sleeps very well at night, you know, and I think if there's any landlords out there listening, you know, it can be very hard work. You know, you really do have to earn it and sometimes put in the hours. Sometimes you do face really hard challenges. You know, a disgruntled mortgage customer once firebombed Sherina's office. Sherina and Quentin, her husband, have had tenants, you know, stuff socks down the sink and turn the water on full blast after they were evicted. And, you know, so you face very, very challenging situations, and the book chronicles those too.
Matthew Desmond is author of the book Evicted, Poverty and Profit in the American City. And if you'd like to join us, the toll-free number is 866-798-8255. If you work on these issues, we'd love to hear from you. If you have faced an eviction, if you have ever experienced substandard housing, we'd love to hear your story, 866-798-8255. You can also email feedback@yourcallradio.org. And let's hear from Lisa in Oakland. Hi, Lisa. Welcome to the show.
Hi. Well, you know, I think it's good that you're trying to humanize people, but I think it kind of misses the broader picture, which is this is a system, and a system that profitizes off of people who need something essential, i.e. housing. I mean, there's entire nations that don't have homelessness, even poor nations like Cuba. So, I mean, I think we really need to step back and not just see this as individuals, but, you know, when 8,000 people have been foreclosed on in Oakland and 20% of the African-American population has been forced out, it's a little beyond a landlord. But anyhow, I guess my question is about the new industry, which I've read about, which is the mobile home investment tours. That there's actually investment tours. You can go and find out about how to buy mobile home lot parking lots, I guess we should call them home places, that, and they sell it. A selling point is that you can raise the rent and squeeze people because they don't have anywhere to go. Mm. They're so poor that they can't move anywhere else. And this is an entire industry that goes around training people on where to invest their extra money. So I mean, I think we need to look back and see that this is a larger structural issue and look at this as an industry in capitalism, profiting off of people living something that shouldn't be a profit at all. And many, many years ago, this wasn't. You know, this, if it wasn't for the government getting in and giving low-interest mortgages many years ago, people wouldn't be having homes to begin with. But, you know, it was the movement away from this low-interest loans from the government into making this into a profit-making business.
Well, Lisa, thanks for calling in. Sorry to cut you off, but we have to go to break. And we'll definitely talk about that. We've done a lot of shows about the very issues that you're raising. Today, we're joined by Matthew Desmond, author of Evicted, Poverty and Profit in the American City. This is Your Call, and we'll be back after this.
I'm Matt Martin, here with Laura Flynn, producer of Your Call, and we're taking a moment from this discussion with Matthew Desmond about his book Evicted to ask for your support for local public radio. The number to call is 800-525-9917, 800-525-9917, or you can go to KALW.org, where you will see the book Evicted by Matthew Desmond, yours for a $120 contribution to KALW.
And this book is brilliant and as well as heartbreaking. Matthew Desmond paints a vivid picture of what poverty in American cities are like today. And the issues that Lisa raises are addressed in that book as well. Through the stories of eight families, you get a sense of the stress, anxiety, fear that come with living through a cycle of eviction, always on the verge of homelessness. I could not put Matthew Desmond's book down, so you should definitely grab it.
It's important to have these kind of voices who can take, obviously, these systemic issues, these issues that affect people across the country, and to put them in a form that you can really absorb them and take those personal experiences and try to ask, what do we as a society need to do to address it? That's what Your Call is about. And when you make your contribution at any level at 800-525-9917 or KALW.org, you'll help keep this space for these kind of conversations open.
And these are the conversations that we really value and prioritize at Your Call Radio. So again, donate now, and you can do that at KALW.org or call 800-525-9917.
800-525-9917. Rose and her guests go in-depth, ask the questions you want asked, or if we don't ask that question, you can call up and take part. That's what this is about. Thanks for your calls and clicks. 800-525-9917, KALW.org. Thanks.
This is Your Call. I'm Rose Aguilar. Today, we're speaking with Matthew Desmond, Associate Professor of Social Sciences at Harvard University, co-director of the Justice and Poverty Project. His new book is Evicted, Poverty and Profit in the American City. Matthew feels like housing doesn't get as much attention as it deserves when we talk about poverty, so he decided to write a book about housing. He embedded himself in Milwaukee from 2008 to 2009 with people who live in a white trailer park and a rooming house in the black inner city. And if you have any questions or comments for Matthew, if you have a personal story about an eviction, substandard housing, we'd love to hear from you. 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. You can also email feedback at yourcallradio.org. So Matthew, what about Lisa's call? I mean, I completely understand what Lisa's saying. We've done so many shows about the systemic issues involved here, but considering you spent a year with these people, I think it's really important to give them a voice and to talk about their personal stories, because we rarely hear from people who live in substandard housing or are calling 81 times and cannot find housing. But what about the point that Lisa made?
You know, I'm a sociologist. We're all about, you know, the system and thinking about things in larger structural ways. And the book certainly does that, too. You know, the stories and the ground-level perspective that Evicted offers us is couched within a larger sociological and historical story about poverty and housing in the American scene. So when we talk about rising housing costs and slumping incomes, we're talking about broader kind of economic patterns that really help explain why someone like Arlene is paying 88% of her income today. So I completely agree with that. And I think that the book tries to tack between looking at things from the ground level and looking at things from a broader level. I think we have to understand how life is lived on a daily basis to really understand things from a system level perspective, too. And what Evicted does is show you the human wreckage that we kind of face when we tolerate this level of inequality and this level of suffering in our cities.
Well, thanks again for calling in, Lisa. Let's go to our next caller, Marty in San Francisco. Hi, Marty. Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Go ahead. You're on the air.
Oh, thank you. I'm a senior, 73 years old. I've lived in San Francisco over 50 years. Had a great career as an author here, a cookbook author, a restaurant reviewer. And I lived in a rent-controlled home for 21 years and back in 2006, and I thought I would probably die in that home. Had a great relationship with my tenant, with my landlord, and I've been a model tenant, and all of a sudden the developers and landlords discovered the Ellis Act evictions, and I was on the first wave of that in 2006, and it was so devastating for me that I looked for a year for housing and could not find anything affordable. And by the way, my book was, you know, a book of the month club selection. I never expected this to happen. And I developed cancer in the middle of the move, which I was not at all surprised. Okay, I managed because I am creative, and I've lived here a long time, and I can think outside the box. I managed to accidentally find a place where I never expected to be, but I always had to have a roommate, a housemate. And the landlord was very decent at first, and he even lowered the rent in the beginning. And then all of a sudden, now, the Ellis Act evictions are being replaced by the market rate increase, and now I've been suffering for the last 4 years under extreme stress and day by day more poverty and not knowing what I'm going to do because I had to, when he raised the rent in the last 2-3 years, $1,350 more per month, and I live on a Social Security income of $618. I have to work until I drop. And so I'm now, I have a part-time pet sitting business that was, I was able to just live a simple life. I just care about having a decent, safe, clean roof over my head and food. And I don't care about the material things, but I do care what's happening to this city and to the people of this city, which is just so unconscionable and immoral and so devastating to people. And I don't know how I'm going to make it much longer because I wrote a 7-page letter, single space, to my landlord, respectful, imploring him to please not do this, please not raise the rent, because I've always been a great tenant with him. And he could not respond to the letter. When I finally called him, he was hesitant, and I just very quietly said, "Did you receive my letter?" And he said, "Yes, I did." And I said, "And what's your response?" And he said, "Well, I really feel bad, but, you know, I have expenses." And now I had to take a new roommate, too, in my tiny, tiny sunroom to rent out so I could make the new rent from January. And I am
so, Marty, you missed rent control, I'm assuming?
Pardon? I ended up in a condo because you can't get back into rent control. They raised the rent so high, I couldn't afford the rent.
Well, Marty, thank you for calling and sharing the story. And we're going to continue doing shows about this. And Marty mentioned the Ellis Act, Matthew. And just to let you know, this is a state law here in California that says landlords have the right to evict tenants to, quote, go out of business. And over the past 5 years, we've been seeing so many Ellis Act evictions. I mean, a lot of older people are getting kicked out for a variety of reasons. And the one thing that Marty brought up that I think deserves so much more attention is the emotional trauma that's involved in all of this.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's right. Marty, thanks so much for sharing your story. And I'm really sorry and saddened to hear it. And, you know, a sad part is it's not an uncommon story.
Right.
So you're right. We have seen a rise, over 100% fold rise of Ellis Act evictions in San Francisco. And, you know, what you heard, the amount of stress and the amount of anguish that was coming through Marty's voice is something that I've heard a lot. You know, we published a study recently that showed that moms that get evicted experience higher rates of depression 2 years later. It's really sticky, the effect on your mental health. And we know that between 2005 and 2010, years where housing costs around the country are soaring, suicides attributed to evictions or foreclosures doubled. So this is something that's having an effect not only on people's pocketbooks, but also on people's spirits, their souls. And I think that Marty's right to raise the moral question. Is this right? Is this moral? Is this who we are?
How I mean, suicides because of housing? How, I haven't seen many stories about this. I mean, I did read about the story of people who are really struggling and are in some cases committing suicide, which got some media attention. I was surprised that it didn't get more. Have you seen much of this reported in the media?
Well, every sheriff eviction squad that I've been on, every sheriff on the squad has a suicide story where you do the knock and you hear the gunshot. If you look at the public health literature, you do see a rise of suicides, a considerable rise of suicides attributed to evictions foreclosures over the last 5 years. So I do think this is having an effect on people's mental health and their depression. And I think that effect is leading, in some cases, to a very sad end.
Every sheriff you've met has a story about this?
Yeah.
I'm just kind of shocked that it's not getting more attention in the media.
Well, maybe you guys should do another story on it.
Yeah, we should definitely do a show about that. We also got some numbers from the Anti-Eviction Mapping Project. Between 1997 and 2015, there have been more than 4,000 Ellis Act evictions in San Francisco. Thank you again, Marty, and good luck in your search. We will continue doing shows about this issue, and thank you so much for calling in and sharing your story. Let's go next to Ruby in Mill Valley. Hi, Ruby. Welcome to the show.
Hi, good morning. My heart goes out to Marty. I no matter where I've ever lived, I've always felt I'm a minute away from a room with a light bulb hanging from the ceiling. I just feel we're all, everything is precarious. I'm so sorry. And yes, I wish her totally the best, and I hope that there'll be some resolution here for her. The reason I phoned in, and I'm a little embarrassed about calling 2 days in a row, but this pushes all my buttons. I go to Milwaukee every year. I'm from there. And I pick up my cousin, and we drive up to see her mom, who's in northern Wisconsin. And every year, I drive around the neighborhood, which is on the northeast side in the inner core. She's at the north end of it, and I am absolutely blown away at the public spaces, the decrepit playgrounds, the broken everything, the weeds, the overgrown, and where kids might be able to do something healthy. And yes, everyone's in turmoil, completely stressed out. I would think they have PTSD after being evicted and having to live in this kind of environment. My questions were, as I was driving around, who's representing these people? Why aren't they getting local government attention? And I don't know, maybe your guest has spoken to somebody in local government. You know, one year we had a black councilman who put a bag over his head for the formal picture of the council members. I don't know if you know about that, sir, but I mean, that was just a little representation of how hideous the situation is. It's such a segregated city. It's shocking, and I'm horrified by it.
Thank you, Ruby. Matthew?
Yeah, so there's a lot to say about that. We know that the quality of your neighborhood really matters for your well-being and your children's well-being. And one thing that I found in my research is that families that get evicted, they move from poor neighborhoods to even poorer ones, to dangerous neighborhoods, with neighborhoods with even higher amounts of crime. You know, eviction actuates a downward move. Why is that? Well, one of the reasons is eviction comes with a record, you know, and thanks to open record laws in many cities, your eviction is free and online for landlords to see. And many of the landlords that I spoke to will reject all applicants that have an eviction within the last 2 or 3 years. And so eviction not only kind of causes you to lose your home, school, and community, but it often pushes you into worse housing, into worse neighborhoods.
And it also prevents you, in some cases, from taking care of yourself. You have stories about people not calling the police for domestic violence, for example, because it could result in a nuisance citation, which can then result in a possible eviction.
Yeah, this is crazy. This is one of the craziest things I found. So in Milwaukee and many other cities across the country, there are these laws called nuisance ordinances, which hold landlords accountable for tenants' behavior. And that behavior is measured on by 911 calls, excessive 911 calls. So in theory, these are laws that should prevent you from calling 911 for parties or loud noise. They should be something that protects police time. But the landlords that I spoke to told me that, you know, who's calling? It's domestic violence victims. You know, that's who's calling a lot. And then I'd say, well, what would you do when you get a citation? And they say, well, we would evict the tenant. You know, it's a really bad day when you get a citation. You could be fined thousands of dollars. So if that was true, then that meant that we were putting women in terrible positions. You could either call the 911 and risk eviction, or you could not call and risk more abuse. So I did a big statistical analysis, too, and I found that what landlords were telling me was true. You know, about every 4 days, a landlord in Milwaukee got a letter, a nuisance letter, and one count was for domestic violence. And in over 80% of the cases, they evicted the tenant. The good news about that story is, you know, when I showed that data to the Milwaukee PD, they changed its law, you know, and so now it's very different. And we've used that study to get the law changed in Pennsylvania and Iowa and Arizona and other states around the country. The bad news is these laws still exist in other places and probably are still having these damaging effects.
Who's pushing these laws?
Well, I mean, they're popular because they ideally save taxpayer money and police time. So many police departments are overwhelmed by the number of 911 calls that come in. And this is kind of pitched to them as a way to kind of be efficient and kind of really direct police attention to where it needs to go. This is a huge unanticipated consequence of this kind of law.
Today, I'm speaking with Matthew Desmond about his new book, Evicted, Poverty and Profit in the American City. Matthew Desmond is Associate Professor of Social Sciences at Harvard and co-director of the Justice and Poverty Project. He decided to spend time in Milwaukee. He was there from 2008 to 2009, living with his subjects in a white trailer park and a rooming house in the black inner city. He says that when we talk about poverty, we focus on things like jobs, incarceration, very important issues, but he believes that housing is really implicated in the creation of poverty. And if you'd like to join us, the toll-free number is 866-798-8255. You can also email feedback@yourcallradio.org. Thanks for calling, Ruby. Let's go next to Anne in Oakland. Hi, Anne. Welcome to the show.
Hi. I just wanted to talk a little bit about the connection between domestic violence and eviction, or just people that are in vulnerable situations in general. My story is that I had a kind of atypical domestic violence situation when I had a very young baby in San Francisco, living in a nice neighborhood, and sought out a roommate situation to lower my rent. And the roommate situation sort of didn't work out after 6 months, and this put me on a cycle of evictions and displacements that's just recently ended. I was displaced from apartment in the Mission when the landlord went to raise the rent by $600, and then ended up in this sort of cottage in Piedmont that had a non-renewable lease and ended up to be an illegal rental in the first place, and then sort of scurried around to find anything and ended up in a really like bad apartment in Berkeley that, you know, had no noise protection, just like a really crappy place. And so in my daughter's life, she's 6 years old, we are on our fifth house. And I just also wanted to speak to the way that this has uprooted us from any like neighborhood networks of support, any sort of like local friend networks, like the way you mothers make friends at the playground, or you like find your way around certain neighborhoods. You find ways to do things, you know, on the cheap, or you find your kind of workarounds in expensive places. So we've been so disoriented and so uprooted from like any system of support. And I wanted to specifically make the connection between I guess in this situation the vulnerability would be around gender, how there's like a sort of coercion that would happen where someone that's, you know, in a domestic violence situation might not be able to or want to put themselves like on a track for this much vulnerability. So I'm not sure if that's making sense, but I just wanted to kind of make that connection.
Yeah, no, it really is. Thank you so much for calling. Is your housing situation stable now?
It's getting there.
Okay. Well, thank you for calling in and sharing your story. What about the gender issue here? We did notice, Matthew, that it seems like the majority of the people you spoke with or at least shared stories about were women.
Yeah, that's right. So, you know, women are evicted at higher rates than men are, and that especially is true in low-income communities of color. And in inner-city Milwaukee, women are evicted at twice the rate as men are from those same neighborhoods. And the way of thinking about this is, you know, we know that incarceration has become this kind of critical but common experience in the lives of young, poor Black men. Eviction is that experience in the lives of low-income Black women. You know, a lot of our low-income Black men are getting locked up. A lot of our low-income Black women are getting locked out. Mm. It is gendered for reasons having to do with domestic violence, for reasons having to do with motherhood, and the fact that kids expose you to eviction, not protect you from it, and for the fact that a lot of women, when they get an eviction notice, they respond in ways that aren't as effective as some men do. You know, a lot of men that I saw would offer to work off the rent for landlords, you know, laying concrete, painting rooms, things like that. But, you know, like Anne brought up, you know, a woman approaching usually a male landlord and offering to work off the rent, it comes with a completely different connotation. Mm. And so there's a lot of things that are working against women and mothers in particular when it comes to exposing them to higher rates of eviction. I also thought Anne's point about the neighborhood was really, really important. You know, eviction doesn't just have an effect on families and children, leaving a deep and jagged scar on the next generation. It can affect entire communities. We know that in Milwaukee, at least, neighborhoods with higher evictions have more violent crime the following year. And I think we can tell a story why. You know, when we work together as a community to improve it, to drive down crime, to beautify it, to stabilize it, we can make a huge difference. But if we don't have a chance to be part of a community, that can affect entire blocks.
Well, thank you so much for calling in. We're also seeing a lot of older women here in the Bay Area being evicted. A dear friend of mine, longtime feminist activist, Marilyn Fowler, she doesn't mind me using her name. She was in the same apartment for 24 years. Her landlord just realized he missed rent control by 1 year, and so he tripled her rent. She's living on SSI, and she's done so much for the Bay Area, and she had no choice but to move to LA to live with her sons. And she says, I'm lucky I have children that I can move in with, because what would I do otherwise? And we just got an email from a listener who wanted us to announce this Stop the Eviction rally today from 2 to 3 o'clock. Support Doña Maria, an older woman who's fighting for her right to stay in the Mission, 3243 24th Street, a rally from 2 to 3 today, 3243 24th Street. We'll put this at yourcallradio.org. And again, thanks for sharing. Anything you want to mention about older women who are being evicted? And also, as we talked about this briefly, but a lot of women are living off of SSI. I mean, from $600 to, you know, the high end is like $1,100 a month.
That's right. You know, Lorraine, my neighbor in the trailer park, she was a grandmother who was on SSI. She had sustained a fall as a child and had a head injury and learning disabilities because of that fall. She was spending over 70% of her income to rent a trailer in a trailer park that the city of Milwaukee considered an environmental biohazard because it had so many code violations. And she had to decide between paying her rent and paying for heat. Mm. And, you know, is this us? You know, is this us? I think that housing is too central to human flourishing and economical mobility and stability and dignity to be treated just as a commodity. I think that we as a nation need to start having a conversation about, do we believe that housing is a right? And I think it should be considered a right. And because without it, everything else falls apart.
Well, Matthew, we'd love to have you back. I mean, a lot of the solutions in many ways are obvious. You just need the political will. But we would like to do a show specifically about solutions and what we can do to change what we're currently facing. Matthew Desmond, author of Evicted, Poverty and Profit in the American City. Matthew, thanks for your work and thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me and thanks for callers.
Yes, especially thanks for callers. Thank you. Yeah. And thank you so much for listening. I'm Rose Aguilar, and I'm joined now in studio by Matt Martin. Hi, Matt.
Good morning, Rose. Really interesting, sobering to hear this conversation between you, Matthew Desmond, and as you say, the people calling in. Yep. These are real stories that need to be told and put into context. That's what Your Call does day in and day out. We ask for your support right now, especially in this hour, when Laureen McLean in Berkeley, a listener just like you to this station, has put forward $750, and said if 15 people will give their support to Your Call in this hour, she will give that additional support of $750. We've already had five people get involved by making a call to 800-525-9917. Be the next person to call, or you can go to KALW.org.
Thank you so much, Lorraine, and thanks to Paul Seliga in San Bruno and Marianne Carlson in Eugene, Oregon. Thank you both
for calling
and clicking. You can give us a call at 800-525-9917 or go online to kalw.org. You are supporting a show that specifically, and it's kind of, this was a heavy show, Matt. I have to take a deep breath.
Yeah.
I mean, these shows are pretty heavy, and I think it's so important to do these shows and to continue having these conversations. I mean, you just get caught off guard when someone like Matthew Desmond says, there has not been one conversation I've had with a sheriff who doesn't have a story about suicide. And the logical question is, why isn't this getting more attention? Right? And so that's why this show is so important, because we're going to do some research. I'm going to do some research right after the show to find out what is happening. And we want to do a show about this. This is the kind of programming you're supporting by calling 800-525-9917 or going online to kalw.org.
We can offer you a copy of Matthew Desmond's book, Evicted. This is getting rave reviews. You know, a lot of times these stories about economic justice, not the kind of things that reviewers go, oh, okay, this is really great, really wonderful, and a lot of people go look at. But this book is so beautifully written, and he's gone so deep with these people and then gives the bigger picture around it. That is what we want to bring forward on Your Call. For a $120 contribution, we'll be happy to send you our thanks to you, so you can deepen your own knowledge. That's what public radio is about. You learn about a piece of something, you go say, I want to know more about that. Someone says, hey, wait a minute, you know, there's this protest going on about this particular eviction in the Mission. Mm-hmm. Where else are you going to hear that but on local public radio? 800-525-9917, KALW.org.
800-525-9917 for $120 contribution. We will send you Matthew Desmond's new book, Evicted. And I was heartened when I found out that it hit the New York Times bestseller list, because people really care about these issues. 800-525-9917. The other thing I love about this is we open the phone lines and hear from so many different people. I mean, these are real issues, and there's a lot of real suffering out there. And I always say, in order for it to change, we need to talk about these things and to give people a platform to tell their story. And that's what you're supporting by calling 800-525-9917 or online kalw.org.
I do think that since the Occupy movement, since I think also the Bernie Sanders campaign has done a lot to raise these questions of economic justice, and of course just the reality people are facing is making it so that, you know, even the kind of commercial mainstream media can't avoid these stories, mm-hmm. which aren't the kind of things that generate a lot of clicks in general, right? This is not the kind of thing, if you want to build up revenue, oh, quick, let's do a story about evictions. But they're paying attention. But it's programs like Your Call, stations like KALW, it's public radio that talks about these issues on an ongoing basis, then that provides that basis so when that time is that the kind of larger conversation comes around, you have the information you need to participate in those conversations. The number to call, we have 1 minute left in this challenge, 800-525-9917. Or you can go to KALW.org. Every call or click until 5 after the hour counts toward this 20 call or click challenge. Help us claim $750 more for local public radio.
800-525-9917. Send a message and say yes. Continue doing this kind of programming. 800-525-9917. As Matt said, 15 calls or clicks is what we need in the last 30 seconds. 800-525-9917 or KALW.org.
We got a call from Paul Reinhertz in Vallejo. He's 79 years old. He's been listening to KALW since he was a kid.
Wow.
This is the first time he's contributed. Thank you so much, Paul, for making that call. Whether you've been listening for decades or whether you've just found this station, if you like what you hear, you know how it works. It's one person at a time giving what they can. And the great thing about these challenges, every call or click counts. This is KALW San Francisco. Thank you.
Thank you.